This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. As part of our 30 Issues in 30 Days coverage, we're diving into a topic that hasn't been talked about a whole lot in this election season, and that's poverty and the poor. We've heard a lot about the middle class getting slammed. We've heard about jobs creation, but not so much about the 47 million people living below the poverty line, which means a family of four living off approximately $20,000 a year. Joining me to discuss what the government's role should be when it comes to helping the poor are two people who know a lot about this, Georgia Madison, the project director of the Poor People's United Fund, and Tim King, the chief communications officer for Sojourners, which is a Christian organization that's dedicated to social justice. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So let's first, because I like for everybody to be on the same page, let's define poverty. So Georgia, first.
Well, I think you did a good job talking about a family of four, what they have to live on, which actually it's very difficult for a family of four to live on that amount of money. But, you know, poverty could be as narrow or as big as you want to define it. Wouldn't you agree with that, Tim?
Absolutely. I mean, we have the federal poverty line, which is around that $23,000 mark for a family of four. But you also have just simply the lack of opportunity. It's the lack of people being able to take control over their own lives or their own circumstances. And we've seen a lot of that occur after this recession in particular. We just premiered a movie last night, The Line, and it's available online at thelinemovie.com. It tells the story of a man who's making six figures. He was a banker in Chicago, living in the suburbs, lost his job when the market crashed, and now he makes $12,000 a year as a substitute teacher and has to move around from house to house, renting houses in foreclosure and doing handiwork to afford the rent. Those are the types of stories that are happening across the country right now, and it comes down to people losing control over their own lives.
Well, you hit a couple of points there that I just want to, you know, pull out if I might. First of all, you discussed a little bit of what it looks like every day, which is, you know, sort of what I was getting at, because when you say the word poverty, I think what comes to mind, depending on who you are, various things. And I can say $20,000 a year, as we've said, and I'm not sure people know what that looks like on the ground, but Tim, you've done a pretty good job of describing that. I wanted to just play a clip from The Line, which is the new documentary you referenced, to hear the voices of people who are actually at the poverty line, and that's what we're talking about here. So here's the trailer from the new documentary about poverty called The Line.
When you have to struggle paycheck to paycheck, it's a hard thing.
There's no way that I can continue to do this and survive with it. Just can't do it.
I mean, I've had my gas shut off. I've had my electric shut off. It's horrifying, and it's embarrassing when your kids go to turn on something and it doesn't work.
I've seen a change not only with income, but I can see a change in the people.
You try to fight yourself out of it, but you can't.
So, Georgia, those are voices of people in this new documentary called The Line talking about their circumstances, about what living in poverty is like. And there we heard this gentleman talking about fighting yourself out of it. You know, what a lot of folks don't, I think, understand about people in poverty is that a lot of people are working. These are working people, you know?
Absolutely. And we have, in our organization, we do advocacy and we raise money for pantries and shelters. And we also have direct service where we work with about 100 families. And like this morning, I was working with a family. Had a relative who is now in prison, and she now has three children under the age of three, and she's getting an eviction notice. We work with that a lot, and she's trying to get access the safety net, and they have to have documentation that's not possible for her to get. So that's the struggle. The struggle to access the safety net, which is very limited and becoming more limited, and those are the people that keep me up at night.
When you say the safety net is becoming more limited, because I think if people think about government assistance, they say, well, we do have these safety net programs in place, and I know people are taking advantage of them. So not how hard should it be, but isn't that making it less difficult for people? So you're saying it's getting worse. Why?
Well, it's just difficult to access the benefits. And, you know, I have spent time in a DTA office asking people.
DTA?
A Department of Transitional Assistance. Asking them how long they've been waiting to apply for cash assistance, welfare, or for food stamps. Many times they've been there all day. It's very difficult. And people call us. We have limited amounts of resources to offer. We refer people. It's a fight. And I have to say, I really respect so many people that I have talked to that are really fighting to stay afloat, fighting to get out of it. And the indifference and the invisibility that goes on, I'm sure Tim would agree with this, goes on with our electoral candidates is very disappointing.
I want to get to that in just a second, Tim, but I did want to talk about that invisibility that Georgia Madison Project Director of the Poor People's United Fund just mentioned. Tim King, you're a Chief Communications Officer for Sojourners. Talk about that invisibility, because I think, again, in the same way that I wanted the two of you to define poverty and to hear what people are going through on the ground, I think people don't see this. So a lot of people don't see this. It's not in their experience. So, you know, the impact of the growing poverty, I don't think is felt by a lot of people.
Yeah, there's certainly a separation in our society. And one of the most troubling ones is from the people in power to the rest of the people in the country. You have politicians who are spending all of their time raising money. And when you're raising money, you're spending your time with people who can afford to make big contributions. So we've got a system right now that is set up to have our politicians spend all of their time and all of their interactions with wealthy people. So of course they are getting more and more out of touch with the needs of people on the ground. And you know what? We've got some big long-term challenges with our country as far as our deficits. But when Congress introduced a plan to try to reduce our deficits, the place they went to first was they decided they wanted to take two-thirds of their budget cuts from programs that help low-income people. And I think what happens is people have this stereotype in their head of poor people. They have this stereotype in their head of government assistance programs that just don't match with reality because they've become so disconnected from the great work that people like Georgia are doing on the ground every day.
So let's talk about the effort that you, Tim, your organization, and others put together to try to get both President Obama and Mitt Romney to talk about poverty. You have both noted that there's not a lot of public conversation by certainly political leaders, and what you wanted was to see them talk about it and certainly talk about it in places like the debates, though I don't think either of you have much hope that that's going to happen. So talk about that, Tim King.
Yeah, we worked with the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, the National Association of Evangelicals, the National Council of Churches, and a broad array of over 65 different denominational leaders, nonprofit leaders. It was not an easy group to get together, but we all came together around some common sense, common ground principles of lifting up what we thought were true Christian principles of protecting poor and vulnerable people in any discussions that we have about reducing the deficit or about our budget and where our money should go. So this group got together and asked both candidates for a short video, just a three-minute video response, talking to people of faith, talking to the Christian community about what they would do to ensure that low-income people were protected and helped in their administration. The great thing is we got both videos. They did respond. You can check those out online.
Well, we're going to play a little clip from both of them. So why don't we pause there and let me play an excerpt from what Mitt Romney had to say in response to your question about poverty. So this is Mitt Romney.
I'm committed to protecting those in or near poverty. For example, I support means testing, where more money goes to those in need and a little less goes to those who are able to support themselves. And I recognize that the assistance provided by your organizations can mean the difference between life and death for someone who's sick or starving. That's why my administration will stand with faith-based organizations instead of standing in their way.
So that was Mitt Romney. He's responding to your request to both presidential candidates to speak about poverty and give some sense of where they stand on poverty and what they would do or continue to do or not do if they were in the presidential office. And this was a request made by a coalition of folks, including Sojourners, where Tim King works, and Georgia Madison supports this effort as well. So now let's listen to President Obama and his response to your request to speak about poverty.
We cannot balance the budget on the backs of the most vulnerable. We certainly can't ask the poor, the sick, or those with disabilities to sacrifice even more, or ask the middle class to pay more, just so we can offer massive new tax cuts to those who've been blessed with the most. It's not just bad economics. It's morally wrong. It's not in line with our values. And it's not who we are as a people.
All right, so there you have it, Tim King. Both of them responded. They seemed to say that they wanted to support the safety net programs that George has pointed out are getting thinner, are shrinking, and not so available to everybody who needs those services. But yet you don't see any more conversation about it happening on the campaign trail.
Well, also, I just want to, if I might.
Georgia, go ahead.
There's a very high-profile United States Senate race in Massachusetts, and neither one of the candidates has mentioned poverty. And I've been following them, looking at their websites. And Massachusetts has a record number of homeless families, 3,700, twice the number from 1990. And right now, about half of the people that go for emergency housing assistance can't get it. Again, the accessibility that I was talking about. We have a record number of food insecure people in Massachusetts.
You mean people who are hungry?
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Sorry about the jargon. it's very disturbing. And I'm sure Tim will agree with me. If elected officials or candidates many times do talk about the poor, they talk about it in very denigrating terms. They put them down.
Well, first, before we go there, I just want to get a response to the video responses, because to your point, in Massachusetts, 1 in 9 people are living in poverty.
That's right.
So that's less, you know, when you think about every group of 10 and one of those persons is living in poverty.
Exactly.
That's kind of a shocking number in Massachusetts,
right.
Where job growth is getting better and better than
exactly.
the national average.
Exactly.
So, Tim, let me get your response to those videos. Okay, they talked about it. Georgia has just pointed out that in the Senate race there's not been conversation, but there seems to have been no more or other conversation other than that which you requested of them.
Yeah, and they addressed it, and we appreciate that. But as you said, the problem is they haven't made it a priority. And when it comes to poverty in America, the reality is we know what works to reduce poverty, and we've done it before. From 1949 to 1959, we cut poverty nearly in half. From 1959 to 1973, we cut it in half again, bringing it from 22.4% of the country down to 11.1% of the country. What's really missing is the political will. We know if we invest in families and children, that helps to reduce poverty. We know if we help make sure that work pays, that reduces poverty. All of these things we know we can do. It's just missing the priority. And I really think that if there were more politicians who saw the people that Georgia was working with every day, who knew them, who knew their stories, who knew their hearts, who knew their struggles, this would change. And the same thing with the media is that, you know what, quite frankly, there's a lot more coverage going right now to horse races, to sound bites, to the most recent scandal, as opposed to doing what you all are doing and saying, all right, there's real issues here. Let's cover 30 issues in 30 days. So thank you for that.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. And we are talking about poverty as part of our 30 Issues in 30 Days election coverage. And I'm here with Tim King. You just heard him, the chief communications officer for Sojourners, which is a Christian organization dedicated to social justice, and with Georgia Madison, the project director of the Poor People's United Fund. Georgia, you were about to go where I want to follow up now, and that is, Tim's just said, if we have the political will, we could make a lot of change and a huge difference in reducing the numbers of people who are living on the edge or barely living on the edge. And yet, as you were about to say, there seems to be some public disparagement of people who are in need, not only of government services, but who are poor. And this, to me, it seems anecdotally, I have no scientific evidence, seems to have become more pronounced in recent years. At the same time, when people who I think would have considered themselves middle class at one point are falling off into poverty. Georgia, help me understand, why is that happening? It seems greater disparagement now, and I'm not certain why that's happening.
Well, I wish I knew why that's happening, because the more disparagement of people that are poor by a lot of elected officials in Massachusetts up on Beacon Hill, the State House, that I've heard, and is that it makes it easier for those programs to be cut if you disparage poor people, if you don't understand their many of their heroic struggles, like I do, it makes it easier for those programs to be cut both nationally and by states, and that's really a catastrophe if those cuts happen.
A lot of people up on Beacon Hill would say to you, Georgia, we just don't want the scammers. We understand that there are people who have needs and we want to be a society that supports them. But there's so many scammers with, for example, the EBT cards. Those are the ones that people use to be able to purchase food. And people are getting away with robbing the taxpayers, and we're just not going to have it anymore. So if you're just an average citizen who is fortunate enough not to be at the line, what you hear from a lot of leaders is that the people who are on using the services are mostly scammers.
Exactly. And I sat through all of those electronic benefits transfer commission meetings every minute. And in fact, there's two EBT cards. There's one for welfare, cash assistance, and there's one for food stamps. The food stamp program has the lowest percentage of fraud of any program in the United States. In terms of the cash assistance for welfare, they're saying that we don't want people to have cash, which is an impossible way to live. And in fact, there's a commission that's beginning to meet that says that people on welfare can't have any cash, that has to be direct payment. And all of those things is a real disparagement of the reality for the poor. And frankly, it almost borders on abuse. I don't know. Would you agree with me, Tim?
Yeah, in our country, you know, human nature is human nature. There's always going to be some people who try to take advantage. And, you know, you can show that there are some people who are poor who will take advantage. But I can point you to a lot of examples of rich people who do too.
I think one of
the things that we need to do is to keep breaking down these stereotypes. And that's why we created this documentary. And it's available right now online, thelinemovie.com. If you have, if you're sitting out there right now and you're thinking, yes, I know those people who have those stereotypes, show them this film. It gives a completely different take. It shows a lot of the stories that Georgia experiences every day. And it also has the opportunity to push this around our politicians. You can go on there and, one thing that we're trying to do right now is to make sure that this is lifted up in the debates tonight. You can go on there right now and take action and ask the presidential candidates to address this and to make sure that this becomes a topic, because our politicians, how they've addressed this too often, they've got a lot of cachet. They've got a lot of leadership. And I'd like to see that kind of moral leadership used to help people think differently about their brothers and sisters who are living right next to them in this country.
Just as a matter of course, because we are talking about 30 issues in 30 days election coverage, tonight's debate is focusing on domestic issues, and most of those questions coming from the rest of us would be filtered through the moderator, Jim Lehrer. But on the third debate, citizens' questions are to be considered directly. So, perhaps now in this conversation and with other issues, people can start to make it known that these are some of the issues that they would like to see addressed in that debate. That's just a a technological point of information for people who might want be interested in making sure that this gets raised up. So here's the thing that's interesting to me. The Occupy movement, whatever you think about it, raised the issue about income disparity, about wealth disparity, wealth distribution, to a point that most people in the country, however they fall down on the Occupy movement itself, have an understanding about it in some broad way. Why did that not move, or has that not moved, to make people have a fuller understanding of what poverty is? Georgia, I'll start with you.
I think that's a really good question. It did make people understand about the massive income disparity between the top 1% and everyone else. It didn't really focus on the Massachusetts now is tied with Arizona. It has the highest disparity between rich and poor. It has the smallest, I guess you could say, middle class. Mm. And I'm actually quite puzzled by that. What do you think, Tim?
I think the Occupy movement certainly raised the question for a lot of people, and it was, to that extent, quite successful. But I think there's a lot of people who it didn't connect with in the same way. There's a lot of folks who are out there who are working 50, 60 hours a week. Maybe they're working two jobs. And the idea about going outside and joining people sleeping on the street just doesn't sound that attractive. And so I think there's some of that.
Let me interrupt you to say that I didn't mean that people had to actually join them. I meant, why wasn't the message that they took, the understanding about, and when you talk about 99 versus 1, that there's now you have to look at where is poverty as well, it seems to me, if you're talking about that.
Yeah, I think some of it was people's ability to relate to some of the images that they were seeing as well. Where, how do you communicate, this vast disparity in terms that people connect with and understand. And sometimes that's going to be as simple as, making sure that in different congregations and pews that it's not so much an us versus them conversation as it is, let's get back to how is your neighbor doing. One of the people who has had a lot of influence on some members of Congress right now is Ayn Rand. And her philosophy explicitly told people that it was immoral. What she taught was that it was immoral to put the concerns of others before your own. And I think one of the things that's missing is getting back to some of our basic teachings of, yeah, we are our brothers and sisters' keeper.
There were people who might say to you, but Scripture says, Tim King, that the poor will always be among us. So, is it possible to focus on it and make it better when we, and the bottom line is that there will always be poor people?
Yeah, and I think that just comes down to some bad Bible reading. Because if you look at the original context of what Jesus was saying, he was actually saying to his disciples, you are my disciples, and I know because you follow me and because I hung out with the poor, you will always be among the poor. So that was really more of an admonition that if you want to call yourself a disciple of Jesus, then you better be where the poor people are. You better be there on the front lines like people like Georgia are. That's what Jesus was saying. If you want to know who my followers truly are, they're going to be the ones who are out there helping the poor and vulnerable, helping those in need.
As a founder of Poor People's United Fund, Kip Tiernan, said, she always said, cui bono, who benefits? If you want to understand what's going on, the moral compass is pointing at who benefits. Who benefits by in the invisibility of the poor, the indifference to the poor, the cutting of the benefits to the poor, and that was always her way of understanding what was going on, and in right now it benefits the upper 1%.
Georgia, make the case for people who think or feel as though this is not an issue for my life. Thank God for, I don't have to worry about this. I don't know how I can do more than just sort of try to make it on my own right now? What make the case for people needing to pay attention to it, even if they're not in the circumstance?
Well, what I did a study when I was in graduate school about shelter, just about, you know, people all across all income lines, and found that that most people were one job away from losing their housing. I was shocked, and especially since housing is so expensive, and we're talking about Massachusetts, Boston in particular. So that's the case. This safety net is for you when you lose your job, when you have a catastrophic illness. And you can, it's like, someone said to me, this group we fund called the Disabled People's Liberation Front. They say, you know, think of yourself as only temporarily abled. Mm. Think of yourself as only temporarily financially secure. And then you can understand the need for these programs.
Tim King, last word.
Yeah, I loved what she said. There, but for the grace of God go I. This could happen to any of us, and I think the heart of our moral commitment should be, how do we want to be treated? And that's why I'll continue to encourage folks, thelinemovie.com. If you've got people you want to share this message with, if you want to hear some of these stories yourself, there's one woman there who had worked herself out of poverty and then tripped and fell down the stairs at the Chicago Transit Authority and became permanently disabled. It's tragic, but these things do happen. And I think that we are a nation who wants to take care of folks who hit on hard times.
Absolutely.
And that's who
we
are as a people.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kelly.
We've been talking about poverty and what the government's role should be in terms of putting an end to it. It's part of our 30 Issues in 30 Days election coverage. I've been speaking with Georgia Madison, the project coordinator of the Poor People's United Fund, and Tim King, the chief communications officer for Sojourners.
Sometimes in our lives.
Edgar Herrick is back here in Studio 3.
Hey, Callie, how's it going there? All right, I got a question for you. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Do you use crutches?
Not to get around, that I'm aware of.
That's right. You might not use physical crutches, but my bet is that you do actually use crutches. You probably just don't realize it. I certainly do. And in fact, we all pretty much do, at least some of the time. We use crutch words.
And what would they be?
Well, an example would be right there, just sort of going or saying sort of. You kind of plug them in. And we've got a couple of literal word nerds who are going to explain what they are, why we use them, and what they say about who we are.
All right. Can't wait.
I'm Edgar B. Herwick III. She's Callie Crossley. And this is Boston Public Radio.
You just call on me, brother, when you